Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Net at Night is brought to you by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte. Episode 15 for March 18th, 2007. Geek is the New Black. Net at Night is recorded before a live audience on TalkShoe.com. It is 0900 in the eastern coast of North America. 0200, actually, I guess 0100 GMT. And 6 o'clock in the evening here in California. From California, I'm Leo Laporte.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Canada.
And this is Net at Night, live on TalkShoe. Thank you for... It seems like I haven't talked to you in ages, Amber.
I know, it's been 2 weeks, Leo. I have to say, it was a sad week last week, knowing that South by Southwest was going on, and you were away, we weren't doing the show. It felt wrong.
Did you feel left out that South by Southwest was happening and you weren't there?
Yes, I really did. I had such a good time last year, and I remember because we did Inside the Net from South by Southwest last year with Mike Arrington from TechCrunch, and it was just so much fun. It was such a great conference, and I think I made more friends there than at any other tech conference ever.
It was a really amazing event, and I was so looking forward to going. And then I got the radio show got syndicated, and I had to go to a talk radio conference in LA instead, and so I had to cancel. I was supposed to be on a panel, which ended up being quite an interesting panel. Jay Adelson of the CEO of Revision 3 was there. That's Kevin's company that does Dignation and all the video podcasts. And he said, it's, you know, Apple TV signals the beginning and the end for the networks. And of course, you got to wonder now with Viacom suing YouTube for $1 billion. Don't you feel like Steve and Chad got out at the right time?
I think they did get out at the right time.
They got their money ran.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to try to get in touch with Steve one of these days soon because I still want to get him on an interview for something I'm doing at City TV. So hopefully he'll still talk to me after we crank called him that time, Leo.
You know, I don't know if you want to talk about this on the show, but we've had trouble with Skype into Canada. In fact, what we're probably going to do is get Amber an ISDN line so that we don't have to rely on Skype to Canada. It turns out it might not be just that it's Canada. It might have something to do with your internet service provider.
Yeah, I know. This is really odd. And last week at Citi, I did this story on net neutrality. So we were talking about how Rogers and Bell, who are two of the big telcos in Canada, and they provide internet service for pretty much most of Canada, how they've been accused, at least Rogers has, of throttling bandwidth. And, you know, I didn't think too much of it, but obviously I did a story on it. It was kind of interesting. I tried to get Bell and Rogers to talk to me, and it was the first time ever that they wouldn't speak to me because the rest of the time they're trying to get me to review their newest phones or latest services.
Yeah, but they don't want to talk about if they're bandwidth shaping.
But supposedly Rogers has admitted to bandwidth shaping, and this is something I found on Michael Geis' blog, and he does a lot of reporting about net neutrality. He's a lawyer from University of Ottawa, and it seems that, you know, they have admitted to doing bandwidth shaping, and I think this is what's happening with my Skype, because I am using Rogers at home, and it would make some sense, because Leo, if you remember, we used to do Inside the Net a year ago, and we would have 45-minute, an hour-long calls on Skype. There was no problems whatsoever, and then all of a sudden, the past few weeks, after about 15 minutes, the packets start to drop out, and we start to have issues, and you know, I kept thinking, oh, it's my wireless, and then I start reading more and more about net neutrality and what's happening, and it just seems a little bit too suspicious.
It's not in their interest. You know, Verizon just sued and won a big judgment against Vonage. These phone companies want to put the VoIP companies out of business. They don't like you using Skype on their bandwidth. Right now, we're getting great round trip, 98 milliseconds. There is a little jitter. There is no packet loss. I'm watching the diagnostics carefully, and I'll let you know if it starts to degrade. And I think that will be pretty good proof that there's something going on. But we have a very good quality now. Hey, coming up, we've got a good show, too. Jeffrey Yan is with Digication. That's a company that specializes in websites, making it easy to do websites if you're in education. I interviewed them when you were on your hiatus during Inside the Net. Great guy. I have to, in full interest of full disclosure, say that after I interviewed him on Inside the Net, my sister joined the company. So she now works for the company. But they've launched a new version of Digication. I wanted to give them a little time on the show. later on to talk about it. And then we're also going to talk about something that puzzles me and I want to know more about, and that's called OpenID. Have you been following this, Amber?
You know, I've been following it on and off, and I just watched an OpenID video and just trying to catch up on what OpenID is. And I've heard about it now and again in tech news and on different websites, again, like TechCrunch. But I'm not so familiar with it. So it should be interesting to talk about it because I know it's really a hot topic for a lot of people in terms of really managing your web identity. And this is totally different than Claim ID. If you remember, Leo, a while ago, we did an interview with the guys who run Claim ID, which is sort of just like creating an online profile page that allows you to claim which pages are yours online. Mm-hmm. But OpenID seems to just take it a total extra step, and it's more about passwords and, you know, not having to fill out forms and just more extensive than anything like Claim ID.
I still use Claim ID. If you go to claimid.com/Leo, that I put that in my signature. I put it on my website so that you know who I am and what pages belong to me. But they are also an OpenID provider. So I have a number of open IDs with a variety of different companies, including the one we're going to talk to in just a little bit, janrain.com, janrain.com. But Claim ID is one that does provide an open ID. So, for instance, if there aren't very many sites yet, but if I go to Technorati or a number of other sites that support OpenID, instead of giving them a unique password just for Technorati, I can log in using my Claim ID. And then I'll enter my Claim ID password, and that will be a single password that will get me into other OpenID sites. It seems like it's got to be more than just that. I mean, that we tried that with Password, remember? The Microsoft Password technology.
Yep.
Scott Kvetten will join us to talk about that in just a few minutes. And, of course, as always, we'll take your calls.
And he seems I actually watched a video with him in it, and he explained it very, very well. So he will be able to clarify everything, good, I think, for everybody out there who's wondering what OpenID is.
Good. Yeah. We made fun of Jan Rain on Twit a while ago, but because they were one of the top 25 web companies, according to Business 2.0. I think it was Business 2.0. But I think OpenID is the next big thing in some ways, and we're going to talk about it with a guy who's been very much part of putting it forward. Now, let's talk about your links, because that's the part I like best on the show. Can we start with the sad story?
Oh, is it Z Frank? I know. So sad. So Z Frank has been doing a video blog for a while now, well, about a year, which is a long time in the video blogging world. And he
does it daily.
I know, and he has one of the best video blogs out there. It's so funny, and he does such a great job. And what I love about it, too, is you would like this because it's like Big Head TV. Leo, remember when you went on and on about how you liked Big Head TV? Well, it's really just Z Frank's big head, and he's talking about everything from politics to, you know, he actually slammed Rocket Boom, and he's just a funny, funny guy.
And he never blinks.
He never blinks because he cuts it all the blinks. And he has just announced that he's stopping video blogging, and it's been big news in the web world. And so he had his last little video blog on his website, and hopefully we have a second if we can play a little bit of this.
This is of course, you should go to ZEFRANK.com and see this yourself. But this was, he put it up yesterday, his last episode of Z Frank. Let me push the button. Go ahead, Zay. You may speak now.
Hi. This is my first Saturday show. Saturdays are funny because they don't really belong to the week that just passed. But they don't really feel like the week to come either. Ideally, they're play days. And so that's what I did. I stayed up last night and I worked on something for you. It's a bit rough around the edges.
He's blinking.
That's all I have to do.
First time he ever saw him blink.
This is a sad, sad song about leaving. This is the price you pay when you purchase a feeling. It's where the conversation.
I'm not going to play the whole thing. I think people should really go to his site to see it. But just to say, what this guy is one of the most innovative, interesting, talented guys on the web. And in a way, I applaud his decision, you know, 5 days a week for a year is a lot of episodes to stop.
You know, you always have to know when to stop when you have good success on your hand, like this video blog. And that's the hard thing, is deciding when you're going to actually end something like this. And, you know, I think he's stopping on a really high note, and it'll be so fascinating to see what he's going to do next. I've read a bunch of things from him moving to Hollywood to possibly being in movies. I mean, he is so talented, and that's one thing that makes his video blog so good, is there's so many video bloggers out there. You know, they have good information now and again, but with him, he was just captivating to watch. And I know we've been watching him for a while, and yeah, I've always been a huge fan.
Go back to the March 13th episode. That was one that was all created by his viewers kind of saying goodbye. Also very powerful.
Very sad.
You know what I like, though, is I haven't seen all of them. I've only seen, maybe a dozen of them. I'm looking forward to going back through the catalog. I can't wait.
You know, that's exactly what I did, is went back, because there was a couple of episodes that I remembered were really, really good. And it just makes you go back and remember, you know, oh, I remember that was really interesting news at that time. And it's kind of fun. It's like watching reruns of your favorite sitcoms.
Yeah. Very funny, very talented, very creative. And there's no doubt we haven't seen the last of him. I think, you know, quit when you're on the at the peak, right?
I agree.
Something I never learned.
I'm waiting for the peak to happen before
maybe that's
I quit.
It. I haven't peaked yet. Flickr targets the Hong Kong market.
I know. This is interesting. Flickr launching in China. And you probably know this, but China has 137 million web users.
Wow.
So the second largest online market in the world, which is just amazing. And so Flickr will be launching there. I'm sure it will do well. Yahoo is really big in China. I was reading a little bit about this as well. I don't know how that works with any or all of the censorship that might happen there, but we'll see how Flickr does.
Actually, Chinese dissident, the wife of a Chinese dissident who was arrested, she says, because of Yahoo, is very angry with Yahoo because Yahoo cooperates with the Chinese government. And they're very much part of China. That Yahoo sees that as a big market. They have a lot of partnerships there. So I guess not a surprise.
Yeah, not a surprise at all. But, you know, if I think of back to Flickr being this tiny little company that started in Vancouver. Yeah, they started in Vancouver and then they got bought. Actually, sorry, they didn't get bought. They moved, I think, down first to California. And now, you know, they're launching in China. It's amazing. They were a tiny little web company out of your new second hometown, Leo.
Yeah, we're moving the TV show there. In fact, we start our first week of taping. It's now called The Lab with Leo Laporte. We start our first week of taping next week. And I was there all last week rehearsing. It's a great, beautiful city. I am so excited. I'll miss Toronto and I miss you, but I have to say Vancouver is beautiful. You know, we're having a hard time, though, finding, you know, there were so many interesting, vibrant companies in Toronto. We're having a hard time finding the same in Vancouver. It's a much smaller town.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the tech community, I think, in Toronto is pretty vibrant. Every time I turn around, there's something happening that I just can't possibly attend. But I know that, you know, I think once you're out there for a while, Leo, the guests will kind of pop up and there'll be people passing through Vancouver. Because after 2 years here, we started to get lots of guests and it didn't seem to be as much of an issue. But hopefully that will happen.
Maybe that's it. We just, you know, you were such a connector for us on that show. And I don't have somebody who knows Vancouver as well as you knew Toronto.
Yeah, I hang out with the geeks. you need someone like that there. We'll hook you up, Leo. I know there's a bunch of Vancouverites who we can put you in touch with and make sure you have a good little network of
would you please
tech people to come. Oh,
see,
yeah, of
that's
course.
That's what we miss. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Will Pate, who's the new co-host of Command N, the video podcast that I do, he lived out in Vancouver for a long time and actually started Rain City Studios, which is a design company out there. They do Ask a Ninja, the website. Them and they have a great crew of people out there who he knows, so maybe I'll put him in touch with you.
That's what we
can throw some names your way.
Yeah, we need some connections. Although I have to say, I was, you know, the studio is kind of in a seedy side of East Vancouver. I mean, as all studios are, they're never in the nice neighborhoods, right? And we were going out to there's only one lunch cafe in the area. We're going out there, and who do I see but Johnny from Tiki Bar sitting there.
That
it was great.
That's amazing.
I said, Johnny, I need a drink.
But that is great.
That's where they do Tiki Bar. And we're actually going to have Dr. Tiki and Johnny on the show, one of our first shows. Lala couldn't make it. I don't know. My reputation precedes me, I guess.
Well, actually, I thought Lala moved down to L.A. I thought she was, for some reason, I thought she was in California as well.
Maybe that's.
Or maybe even San Francisco.
Really?
I don't know. For some reason, I thought there was some connection there, but maybe it was something.
I'll have to ask the doctor. He would know.
Yeah, ask the doctor. You'll ask Dr. Tiki.
Dr. Tiki.
And Kevin Rose knows her too, so he might know if she's down there.
He will know
as well.
Oh,
he will
know.
Definitely know. Yeah. That's what I hear.
If she's moved down there, I think he will know. He will have a lot to say about that. By the way, I do want to mention that there is a live podcastathon going on right now. I don't want you to immediately tune over to it, but after we're done, to benefit Kiva. You know what Kiva is? K-I-V-A?
Oh, yeah. The small donations that you can give to people in developing countries. That's a great site.
I figure you'd know about it because of your parents' work with Sri Lanka and your interest in Sri Lanka. It's started at noon Eastern time and continues through noon tomorrow on TalkShoe. So if you want to know more about it, you can go to talkathon.org. Or you could just look for it on a talk show. And I thought I would mention that it is ongoing right now. 100% of the funds raised, including, by the way, a $500 donation from talk show, will be reinvested perpetually through Kiva, which is kind of neat. That money continues to work.
That is great. I did a story on Kiva a while ago. That's really neat that talk show is doing that. They're just exploding. It's so funny. I got an email from a 12-year-old kid in Toronto who said he just started his own live podcast on talk show. He's 12 years old. Anyhow, I think they're doing pretty
12
well.
12 years old. Wow.
I know.
That's
amazing. He's our competition. That's what I think.
No, we have no competition. Well, maybe a 12-year-old, we might.
He might, you know.
Dylan's in our chat room. He says, I'm 14. I do one, too.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting a little nervous about all these smart up-and-comers who we're educating right now to take our jobs, Leo.
I think it's great. And I think it's wonderful that the things like this Kiva Talkathon are going on, too. So after we're done, head on over there. And by the way, I should mention also that we are contemplating a schedule change for this show. We'd like to do it a little earlier for a number of reasons. One, because it's kind of late for Amber, but two, it's also really late for our European listeners. And I know we have a lot of listeners who would like to listen, but 0200 is a little early in the morning for them. So we're going to move the show back a couple of hours. We will, starting next week, be doing the show at 7 o'clock Eastern time, 4 o'clock West Coast time. And that'll be our time from now on. You know, we did Twit Live just an hour ago.
So are you going to do that every week, Leo?
I'm thinking about it. It went really well, I thought.
So you took calls and
you
had people in the chat room.
We did an hour round table. And it's funny because Jason Calacanis was listening in TalkShoe. And he was just champing at the bit to get in. So we took him as a call. And he was great. He had a lot to say. We were talking about, Mike Arrington. Is really stepping up TechCrunch. Did you hear about this?
I know. He got a CEO for TechCrunch.
Yeah, Heather Hardy, and she is a former mergers and acquisition specialist with Fox.
And it got leaked that she was moving there. He didn't tell everybody, I guess. And on Om Malik's blog, I guess, he's the one who found out because of an internal memo at Fox. There's a lot of drama going on with the whole thing.
Wow.
But good for Michael. That's great.
Well, and we were talking about it. And of course, the speculation is, considering who's running the business now, that TechCrunch will very likely be acquiring New Media properties. I was saying dig, and Jason's going, not dig, no. Anyway, Jason had some interesting things to say. That tweet will be out later tonight, Sunday night. And if you're listening to the podcast on Tuesday, just go back to twit.tv and you can listen to that. Jason's only on for a brief period, by the way. There are a few people who allergic to Jason.
What's Jason doing now?
He has a Calacanis cast. He's doing great. He's moved to LA. He does his, he's doing a video podcast and an audio podcast, and I think he's really enjoying it. Calacanis cast. At calacanis.com.
I'll have to check that out.
Now, you're on Twitter.
Yes, I'm on Twitter.
From time to time.
Once in a while.
Not a lot.
Not a lot. You're on a lot, though, Leo, because I don't even need to talk to you anymore. I know what you eat for breakfast.
I know. I post everything. Broccoli waffles. That was a special thing.
Yeah, that doesn't sound so good.
No. So there's a new... I've always had a hard time explaining what Twitter is, but there is a new way that I think is a very great visual way for communicating about what Twitter is all about. Twittervision.com. And I tried like the Dickens to get David Troy, the guy who wrote it. He just put it up today. And I've been trying to get him on Net at Night all day. And he's not responding to my tweets. But he has written go ahead and go to it, Amber. Twitter.
Oh, don't worry. I'm on my way.
Twittervision.com. It's a Google Map mashup. He had Twitter Map, which was a static mashup, but now this is a live Ajax mashup. As tweets come in, they pop up on the map of the world. So you see what people are doing all over the world. Now you have to location enable Twitter before this works for you just by typing L colon and your location, which could be a city, could be a zip code, could be I use longitude and latitude. And then from then on, when you tweet, when you post on Twitter, it will pop up on this map. And I think
so, Leo, when you say when you post on Twitter, you call it tweeting. Sorry, I'm just trying to get the
I don't know what to know. I'm they call
or did
them,
you just make it up?
Well, they call them tweets.
Okay, gotcha.
And I call them tweets because I use a little Quicksilver script. So I just do it in Quicksilver. I don't even have to launch anything. I just launch Quicksilver, hit period, enter my message, tab, type TW, and it goes out. So it's very quick. But anyway, so the idea of Twitter is you answer the question, what are you doing right now? That's all. And it's really interesting when you're looking at this Twitter Vision map to see what people all over the world are doing right now.
That is very cool. What a great idea.
Yeah. Neat thing. And David, if you're listening, I want you on Net at Night.
Yeah, you should definitely come on. That's a great use of many, many technologies, Leo.
Talk about a massive mashup. Now, you sent me some links, and I'm really puzzling because I'm looking at one link that was a Google search for Kate Moss. Is there a reason why you did that to me?
Okay, this is kind of a funny story, but I did a story about a week ago about a new perfume from Calvin Klein that's coming out called CK Into You, and they're marketing it as a perfume for bloggers in the text messaging generation, which is hilarious. I thought it was a joke at first, but it's totally legitimate.
I think deodorant and mouthwash would be a little bit more apropos, but all right, go ahead.
Yes. And so I went into Wikipedia and I was searching for Kate Moss because I wanted to see if she was actually the model in some of the Calvin Klein perfume ads. I don't know. I just got in this long tangent of web surfing. And when I looked her up in Wikipedia, it had her date of birth and then it has her death date.
What?
As well as where she... No, but she hasn't died yet.
Right.
And then her place of death as well. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. There's all these blank fields. And so I just thought it was kind of interesting on Wikipedia with some people, how they're kind of just waiting for them to die. And I wonder if Kate Moss is one of those people. But the reason I had it here is just because of this other site that I wanted to mention, which is the top 100 pages on Wikipedia. So the top 100 pages that people are going to on Wikipedia, which is kind of interesting. This site is only 17 days old. And so that was the second link that I sent you. So it's a roundabout way from going from Kate Moss to the top searches on Wikipedia.
Now, this WikiCharts has a way to go, I think, because the number two page on Wikipedia right now is the Battle of Thermopylae, which
I don't.
Oh, maybe because of, well, you know why? Because of 300.
Yeah, because 300 is like one of the top search results as well. And you didn't like that movie.
Oh, God, it was awful.
Yeah, I know.
Did you like it?
I haven't seen it yet, but I saw what you posted on Twitter about it. So,
well, I think a lot of people loved it. And the comic book was great. I love Frank Miller, but I just didn't think it was a very good movie. It just wasn't that interesting. It was like Hercules with really good graphics.
Hercules with really good graphics. I didn't see that on Twitter, Leo.
And frankly, watching somebody's head get chopped off 5-6 times is a little dull. They're really graphic. It's really graphic.
A little too much. the site is really new, but I think it's fairly accurate for the past 17
Well, now
days.
I understand because of the Battle of Thermopylae. I couldn't figure out why that would be number one, but then number four is 300.
It's all making some sense.
And you know what? After I saw the movie, of course, I went to Wikipedia and looked up Sparta. So,
of course you did.
Now
that's
I
what
understand.
Wikipedia is great for.
Yeah.
It was funny. I actually interviewed someone, Simon Pulsifer, who has just moved from Ottawa to Toronto, and he is known as the king of Wikipedia. He's edited more entries than, I think, anyone on Wikipedia, or he might have dropped it to place two, which is like 98,000 articles that he's edited. Unbelievable.
You heard about the kid, like the 20-year-old kid who was posing as a professor of theology.
Yeah, that was what my story was about. That kid that he's from Kentucky, 24 years old. But what was interesting when I was talking to Simon is that all of the entries this kid had put into Wikipedia were, in fact, accurate.
Yeah.
As the Wikipedians said, I learned this new word as well from Simon, Wikipedians. and so they were totally accurate, but he lied about his credentials, I'm assuming, because he wanted to be taken more seriously.
Yeah.
I can understand that.
It was kind of a giveaway when he said his number one resource was Theology for Dummies.
That's got to make anyone wonder.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a little strange. Leo, I know that we have two guests, so I'm wondering how much time we have for...
Let's do a couple
more.
Links.
Okay, the first one is from Peter Hatley. He sent me a link to adoptasheep.blogspot.com. I know, I love this. So he was saying, because we had Evan on the last episode of Net at Night, and he was talking about Blogger. He was one of the main people behind Blogger, that there's this great blogger site, Adopt a Sheep. And because Australia is going through one of the worst droughts, you actually go to this site, and a farmer has put up his own blog where you can adopt a sheep for $35, and 2,300 out of 2,600 sheep have been adopted so far.
Wow.
Pretty impressive. For $35, you can give them hay and grain for 100 days, and it will help the sheep survive. And he actually gives you this little certificate, so you find out which sheep you adopt. And you pay with PayPal.
I don't know. I'm going to send him some money, because I love sheep. Sheep are the sweetest animals you've ever met.
I know, you can pick what sheep you want to adopt too, what type of sheep, I guess, what the sheep looks like. And then
stupid,
you can even write the sheep a note if you want to, I guess.
They don't read. I got news for you. They can barely handle.
How do you know?
We had sheep on our old property. We had goats first, and they were too smart. Because, you know, we had 2 acres, right? This is the last house we lived in. You saw it.
I was at your farm, yeah.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of grass, and I thought, well, you know, we'll get some goats and they'll eat the grass. No, they don't eat the grass. You know why? Because my wife fed them alfalfa. So they said, well, I'm not. What are we eating the grass for? You're giving us alfalfa. So then we got rid of the goats. They're making, by the way, we didn't kill them. We didn't eat them. They're making goat cheese right now on some farm somewhere.
Aw.
Big in Petaluma, goat cheese. So then we traded them in for sheep. But sheep are really stupid. The sheep kept getting caught in the fence. It's really dumb. And they're very sweet, though. You love the sheep. They're just like, they just stand there. They don't do much. They're very sweet. I really
like
sheep.
They're very cute.
Yeah. Not bright, but very nice. But goats are too smart. Yeah.
So adopt a sheep. blogspot.com. Just for anyone out there who wants to also adopt a sheep. Because I know you're going to do it, Leo.
I am. I love sheep. And now a little word from Norway.
Well, I was obsessed with Sweden for quite a long time, and fortunately Mikey Twitt, I can't believe this guy's name is Mikey Twitt, it's just too close to home, but he sent me a link to a band called Hurra Torpedo from Norway, who does a very strange interpretation of a Bonnie Tyler song that I think we all know and love.
Yeah, Total Eclipse of the Heart, but they're kind of in a kitchen.
Yeah, they're the world's leading kitchen appliance rock band.
I think they're the world's only kitchen appliance rock band.
They're using an old fridge as a bass.
He's using a fridge for the bass, and then the guy's standing, stirring a pot on the stove.
Then I see the look in your eye.
You know, I'm thinking there's a reason why they're using the kitchen appliances.
I don't know, Leo.
To distract from their singing.
Possibly, but you can find them at hurratorpedo.org, and that's H-U-R-R-A, torpedo.org, or on the blog, which is theroomabovethegarage.blogspot.com. And I don't know, it's just funny. I thought, it's random, but everybody needs a little random video.
It's pretty funny.
Let's
bring in Jeffrey Yan here. Jeffrey is the founder of, I think, a very cool website called Digication. I have to say, a little disclaimer here in the interest of honesty, that my sister works for Digication. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to Net at Night. Can you hear me?
Hi there, Leo. How are you?
We're great.
Yes.
Hi, Jeffrey. It's Amber.
Hi, Amber.
Now, tell me a little bit about, because you've just rolled out a new version of Digication. So tell me, first of all, for those who didn't hear the original interview on Inside the Net, what is Digication?
Well, Digication is, in a way, a social network for teachers and students to use to communicate with each other, to share their work, and to just showcase what they've done.
It really is an easy-to-use, you don't want your kids to use MySpace or Facebook, really, as a way to show their portfolio or to have a seminar so this is kind of as easy to use as that, but it's specifically designed for schools. How many schools now are using Digication?
I was actually quite surprised this morning. I checked the system and there are users from over 700 schools across
the
U.S.
It's free to up to how many students?
1,000.
So your first 1,000 are free.
Yeah,
but eventually you'd like to make money by licensing this technology to various schools with larger enrollments.
Yes, that's correct. And we actually do have an additional administration tool for even the smaller schools who is looking for some of the more advanced features.
We use my daughter's school, and I've seen many schools use proprietary, very expensive software that is really, frankly, not that good to do this stuff. And I was so impressed with how easy Digication is to use. Tell me, now you're rolling out a new version. Is that what's going on?
Yes, we just did.
Tell me about it. What's new?
Well, one of the things that we've done is to incorporate a lot of the features that our users have been asking for in the last few months. And some of those things are, you know, like things like being able to comment on a per page basis so that people from the public can see what you've done and they can tell you, you know, give you feedback. And then there are a lot of other things like such as being able to allow for teachers to have more granular control over who should see the, you know, the profiles and who shouldn't. And then there is one piece which is integrates very tightly now with a whole set of classroom tools that previously was a separate system at Digication. And that essentially allows for teachers to do things like holding discussion boards and even grades and attendance and things of that sort.
So is it similar at all? I'm just thinking, Leo, do you remember a while ago we had people on call for help from Nuvo? Are you familiar?
It's not. Yeah, Nuvo is more like where you would put courseware up online.
Yeah.
Okay.
This more be more like, say, something like Moodle, right? Moodle is the open source kind of version of this.
Yeah, in a sense, you know, this is a really good question, Amber, because sometimes people look at Digication and they're not really sure what is it equivalent to. And to be honest, we are not really in such a defined space that we are strictly a Moodle equivalent, because Moodle, it's, you know, what's called learning management systems that are used for people to a lot of schools to use to run their courses online altogether. We don't think that Digication is necessarily a replacement for the classroom, but what it also then incorporated is a lot of the social networking aspects of being able to share work, publish what you've done, publish what you like, and let encourage others and motivate others to learn and teach.
So I remember a while ago, I think it was actually probably in 1999 or 2000, I used to use Blackboard software quite a bit, and I think it was used in some of the schools.
Right.
So this is really kind of taking a Web 2.0 approach to online learning software for schools.
This is interesting because Blackboard was one of these software that, you know, that really was built in the late 90s, and it really does have a feel of a software that is, you know, over 10 years old.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people that had, you know, a lot of universities had been using Blackboard for the last few years, and they kind of didn't know what the universities themselves want. And, you know, since there was a software out there, they went ahead and just kind of used it. A lot of Blackboard users are not really all that happy, and they're not really finding that it's solving all of the problems or, you know, delivering all the promises that Blackboard said that they would. And in fact, I teach as well, and a long time ago I did look at Blackboard as an alternative, and that was one of the reasons that I built Digication. It's because when I looked at Blackboard, I just couldn't quite see myself using it. It was just too hard, and it wasn't really addressing what I wanted as a teacher.
Jeff, you and Kelly, your wife, are educators, so it was just kind of natural that you would be doing your own software.
Absolutely. We're educators, and in some sense, Kelly and I are both educator geeks, if there is such a thing. Because, you know, in some sense, we are, and I actually mean it in two different ways. One is that, yes, we are, you know, geeky in the, you know, kind of technical kind of sense, but we're also geeky in the sense that we teach at the education department of a school. And so we are geeky in, you know, in terms of education theories and, you know, things like that as well. So we are really very much into the idea of, you know, what learning is about and what it should be and what are the opportunities that the web can offer today, and without going to the cliche of, you know, 24/7 access and things like that.
Amber, when I was in Providence visiting my mom and sister last, I stopped by Digication and they gave me a little tour. And I said, you know, this is a great tool. I mean, I would love to have this as a blog tool. But you guys are smart, I think. You're not trying to become a wider tool.
Yeah, that's many people who had seen Digication, especially in the business world, has come to us and said that, wow, you know, why shouldn't we be using yeah. this as a way to communicate? And in some sense, you know, we built the tool in a way that is quite broad. So yeah, there's no reason that they couldn't. But as a business, Kelly and I, as I said before, are real educators, and we're kind of geeky in the educator sense. And
we're not geeky with us.
Yeah, yes. and we are. Oh, I'm proud to be that. And that's the geek is the new black.
Right.
And,
that's right.
And so When we thought about pushing it to the market, we just really thought, let's push it to the market to the people that we really know the best. Because I'm not, I don't work in a large corporation. I don't want to pretend to know the inner workings of how that works. And if I really don't know that very well, I have a feeling that I'm not going to be able to address all of their needs as best as I can. And so I just focus on what I know best.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Jeff, and I wish you all the best. If people want to know more or just sign up their school, because it doesn't cost anything, so you could just sign up your school without yourself, go to digication.com. And I think it's just really neat stuff. We wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Leo and Amber, and I really thank you for the opportunity, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Good.
Yeah,
you will.
Thanks. And I'm going to steal your line, Jeff. Geek is the new black.
Isn't that good? I think that's so good. I think that's so right on. Now, we were talking about Facebook and MySpace, and I know you're on both. And in this kind of vein of social networking sites, I'm loving Verb. Have you played with Verb at all?
I haven't played with Verb, but I'm starting to get a couple of invites to Verb, and I think someone even emailed me and said that you were on Verb.
I have a Verb account, yeah.
I have to catch up, Leo. Oh,
you know why? Because you had so many friends on MySpace, I thought I can never catch up there, so I'm going to create my own site.
Yeah, exactly. Now you're moving over, and I'm going to have to follow you, just like I followed you on Twitter.
You're going to like Verb because it's very customizable. The CSS is just incredible.
It's a beautiful site, actually. I checked it out already today, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I thought MySpace is always going to be the number one social networking site for a long time. But I think as new sites come like this, I think they could lose a lot of people. I even find myself not going there as much since I started using Facebook, and I realized, wow, Facebook is far more advanced than MySpace. And then I look at Verb, and I think, wow, this is much more beautiful than any of them. And it looks, just like you said, more customizable. But what do you like about it?
Well, I think it's important that there isn't really anything keeping you on MySpace or Facebook. It's just, where are your friends? And if your friends migrate somewhere else, you're going to go there. This is a notoriously fickle crowd, this young, college-age crowd. And they change shoes every 6 months. They change fashions, they change styles. And I think these social networking sites, frankly, I feel really bad for the Facebook guy. He had an offer of $1 billion from Yahoo and turned it down.
I know. But, Facebook, I can't believe, at least I don't know what it's like in other parts of the world, but it is exploding among my peers and colleagues at work.
Is that the one they're using?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean,
my daughter was on MySpace, dropped MySpace, moved to Facebook. And I'm thinking that the next thing is they're going to, maybe it'll take a few months, but then it's going to be Verb. And then it'll be something after that and something after that. I don't see any reason why not, right?
Why not? You can move wherever you want.
Right.
It's the beautiful part about it.
So do you think he should have held out, or do you think he should have sold for a billion?
Oh, I think he should have sold. I mean, I think he's only 23 or 24 years old. He founded the company, I think, he dropped out of Harvard.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there gets to be a certain point with that much money that you just think, you know what, I'm just going to take it and go do something different.
Take the money, and it's not like you couldn't start the next one with the money.
I mean, that is so much money. But I did hear, and I read some reports about this, that some people speculate that the number of people on Facebook is going to maybe not exceed MySpace by the end of the year, but it's definitely going to be competitive. So I feel like he's holding out for that opportunity.
Sure.
But still, you know, I don't know. I don't think this money is going to come along, you know, again for a lot of these people.
Well, that's the gamble. That's the gamble, isn't it? They said, we want $2 billion. Yahoo apparently was willing to go to 1.4.
I would have taken
$1 billion.
But having lived also through the dot-com boom and crash, right. I also know that, you know, things became totally overinflated at the time. And, you know, it's good not to get too greedy and just accept a certain amount of money. Like $1 billion for a site you started when you were in your early 20s. You know, you're successful at that point.
Yeah.
You don't need to wait for any more money necessarily.
I would say so. Hey,
one other thing. I just wanted to mention that someone had just sent me a message that Z Frank he's not going to stop video blogging completely. I don't know what else he's going to do or under what format, but he will still be video blogging, but just not doing the daily thing anymore.
Well,
so,
I don't blame him on that, boy.
That's a lot of work. Anyway, I don't know what he'll be doing, but I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. By the way, you don't need an invite anymore for Verb. They got out of beta a couple of weeks ago, and now anybody can go to VIRB.com and take a look at it. Let's start talking about OpenID. What do you say? Are you ready to? Scott Kvetten is with a company called Janrain, JANRAIN.com. He came to my attention first when we mocked him on Twitch.
Nice.
That's a good way to meet people. Mock them. We were talking about the top, I think it was the top 25, what was it? The top 25 new businesses. I think it was in Business 2.0. Anyway, let's get Scott to join us on the show. Scott, you could turn off your video. We are an audio show only.
Got it.
But it's great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And accept my apologies for mocking Janrain.
Well, you know, it's we get a lot of grief about that name, and we wish there was a cooler reason for the name, but the guy who started the company was in Portland in January, and it was raining, and that's it.
Well, now I like it better now.
Yeah.
I like it better now, too, because I wasn't sure who was coming on the show, if it was Scott or Jan. I was a little confused by your email to you.
Scott is the CEO, and the thing that is interesting is that this is an OpenID company, and, you know, you're hearing an awful lot about OpenID now, and you did a great video, which Amber mentioned earlier, explaining it. And I thought, boy, let's get the guy.
And, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
What is OpenID all about?
Well, you know, OpenID is that technology that's going to solve the one username, one password problem. You know, when I did that sort of 5-minute video, the first question that I ask any group of people is, how many of you have too many usernames and passwords? And,
right.
And you know, everybody raises their hand. And, you know, OpenID is a really simple technology. It's really easy to use, really easy to deploy for site operators and all those kinds of things. The big thing and the reason that it's taking off is because it's completely decentralized. In other words, there's no mothership where all your data phones home to. No one company owns it. It is really identity the open source way. And that's why we're seeing the momentum that we're seeing.
In fact, if you go to openid.net, that's exactly what they say. And I guess that's kind of the place to go to get to begin. But there are a lot of companies like Janrain that are going to try to make a business out of it, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a bunch of companies in the space that are jumping into it. A bunch of, you know, smaller companies are also starting to OpenID enable, if you will. Dig announced a couple weeks ago that they're going to OpenID enable. NetVibes, a bunch of companies in the hopper that are going to be OpenID enabled. We're actually, from our perspective, we're seeing about 25 to 30 new sites a day coming online that are supporting OpenID. So that's really, really exciting. And, you know, how does something like this take off? Well, you know, a technology like OpenID really sells itself. The users of the technology go, wow, this is great. They don't have to go and pay some fee or join some country club. They download the technology and they're off and running.
I just, after you finished, maybe just explain exactly how it would work from kind of step one, because just for, you know, I'm very interested in actually signing up for it as well.
Well, and also, sure. Haven't we seen this before? Didn't Microsoft try this with Passport? Didn't AOL try something similar? I mean, this isn't the first attempt at this.
Absolutely. You know, this is one of those technologies that's been around for a long time and people have tried to do it.
Sometimes they call it single sign-on, where you sign on once, but everybody recognizes that.
Absolutely. And you know, when Microsoft tried it, when AOL tried it, they all wanted to be the keeper of the keys. They wanted all the data to be, you know, controlled by these companies. And really what happened is there was a grassroots, you know, sort of open source movement around this technology, OpenID, that said, you know what, let's solve this single sign-on problem. Let's just get that done. And what that's going to do is enable so many other possibilities out there. And I'll talk more about those in a little bit. But what's been interesting is seeing projects like Drupal, like WordPress, and others come up and be OpenID enabled. And so, you know, a user that's running a blog or their own content management system can turn it on and, you know, boom, they have accounting automatically. So
you start by going somewhere like myopenid.com, which is your company, or I, by the way, I have an OpenID there. Or ClaimID, which is one we've talked about, Amber, ClaimID.com. I have an OpenID there. I think I have like 10 OpenIDs, which is really defeating the whole purpose.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, this is the nature of a new technology, right? People are sort of starting to feel, you know, which provider they want to choose, which one they want to trust. I think it's going to be where the real OpenID provider that does the really good stuff, and hopefully we're going to be that company, is the what you land at your OpenID, right? So in my case, I'm kavitan.myopenid.com, and that's an interesting piece of real estate as far as the user's concerned. I could put some kinds of information there, like my contact information, maybe my social network, etc. And as I go from site to site and I log in, they know to look back there, and they know that's me. So they could pull in my contact information. They could pull in my social network, you know, my busy free data, all these kinds of things. And so what OpenID is going to enable are the next generation of sort of Web 2.0 applications. Yes, I'm sorry, I said Web 2.0.
That's okay.
But the next generation, and really put the meat behind some of these great, you know, sort of fun applications we've been seeing. You know, come down the line. So Amber, you know, just to sort of walk through the process of how it all works, you know, what happens is you get this OpenID and you sign up for one at ClaimID or MyOpenID with us, and you go to a site that's OpenID enabled, and a really great one, you know, obviously, again, this is another one of our sites, is Jyte, JYTE.com, and you enter in your OpenID, and you just enter in your OpenID, and what happens is you hit, you know, you say sign in, and you're redirected over to your identity provider, and that's where you enter your password. And then your identity provider will say, hey, the site maybe wants your email address or a nickname or your full name or your gender or, you know, whatever bits of information that you want to provide. You can say, no, thank you, I don't want to give them that. Or you can say, hey, go ahead, you can have it, and then you're automatically logged in. So for sites love this because they can get rid of the registration screen. You know, so many sites have the problem of, you know, you go to engage and you see that registration screen and users go away. With OpenID, you just log right in. So you really lower that barrier to engagement for users, which is, I think, really exciting.
Thanks a lot, Scott. Now I'm like, well, I could sign up for so many more sites.
Well, one of the reasons I've signed up for so many OpenIDs is I don't want anybody else to get Leo or Leo Laporte. I kind of want to own that.
Well, you know, in your case, Leo, you actually own your own domain name, don't you?
Yeah, it's Leoville because somebody else has leolaporte.com.
Right. So what you can actually do is if you look up OpenID delegation in Google, what you can do is actually use leoville.net or .com, whatever it is. As your OpenID. And then what you do is you delegate it to a provider of your choice.
Yeah, ClaimID supports that. In fact, I think I've already set that up. You put a little JavaScript or something, some sort of code in your...
Two HTML tags in the head of your document, and you're off and running.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Jan Rain supports that as well.
Of course. Yeah. We, you know, there's so many users who have their own domains. You know, there's something like 83 million registered domains out there. And the folks that are in ICANN are saying that's going to be 500 million by the end of, in the next 4 years.
Well, Amber, you have AmberMac.com.
Yep. I own AmberMac.com, so I could easily just do it with that.
In fact, I registered recently my kids' names, HenryLaporte.com and AbbyLaporte.com, because I thought, well, you know, they probably should have this. Do you think that going forward, that's going to be kind of the locus for your OpenID? Is your website?
You know, I really do think that's actually what's going to happen. You know, I think that the features and the tools that are coming out to be able to sort of work around your OpenID to do things like social networking and all these other things will really make your OpenID the place that you do everything that you do online, which I think is really exciting. We actually partnered with the guys who manage the .name registry, and you can go right now to freeyourid.com and sign up for a free .name domain name. It's live instantaneously, and there's an OpenID hooked to it. There's email, all these different things, and you get it free for 90 days, and then after that, it's like $10.95 a year. So again, you know, here's this destination, here's this OpenID, you know, here's all these things you get in one fell swoop. So
what type of people do you find are using OpenID the most? Is it kind of the early adopters?
Oh, it's definitely the early adopters. It's the geeks who get the technology who really are tired of dealing with, just dealing with having so many usernames and passwords. What's really interesting about this too is as I go from site to site to site, you know, maybe I'm editing a wiki with my OpenID or posting a blog comment. Well, when I do that, there's a link back to my OpenID. Now, as you do this on lots of different sites, the link love that you get from Google goes up and up and up. So your OpenID now becomes the piece of real estate where people go to find information about you, because they go into Google and they search for your name and up pops your OpenID. So you want to have some interesting information there and be able to get in touch with that user from that point. So I think that's actually going to be one of the interesting plays with OpenID.
It looks like the OpenID providers are all kind of trying to stake out some sort of value add to the basic OpenID service. Claim ID
right.
lets you claim your web pages, which seems
sure.
sensible. I just recently joined a service, 2IDI, which is handles email, basically.
Sure.
And that's an interesting OpenID play. What is Janrain adding? What value add are you going to?
I'll tell you, we're actually going to be headed towards the reputation space. Now that I have these identities, these unique identity that I can use anywhere on the internet, now it's time to associate some sort of reputation with that and be able to take it with me from site to site to site. I can't do that with my eBay reputation. I can't go to some other site and say, hey, I'm this guy over on eBay, and by the way, I'm great. And so we're actually moving into, the reputation space. And I think it's one of those places that all the folks like Dig and others are interested in, because there are so many sort of griefers out there that you'd love to sort of be able to, move out of the way because they don't have a high enough reputation. We're really hoping we can be the company that provides that.
Do you see this something that will become really kind of mainstream almost in a couple of years down the road?
I actually think it'll be even shorter than that. I mean, when you look at the where we're at in terms of the technology, there's about 75 million users who are OpenID enabled today. I think by the end of the year, that number is actually going to be closer to 250 or 300 million.
Wow.
Now, what this means is that doesn't mean all these users know they have it. What's going to happen is whatever company can come along and make this as easy as possible for sort of grandma to make it work, mm-hmm. that's going to be the one who really knocks it out of the park. And actually, that's really what we're focusing on trying to do.
I think the other side of it is that you've also got more websites to support it. I still log on to Expedia through Passport because I have a Passport account and Expedia takes it. And boy, I'd sure like to start using, OpenID on Expedia and these other commercial sites.
Absolutely.
What's the take up from commercial sites? I mean, when Amazon starts using it, that's when grandma starts to pay attention.
Sure, sure. Well, and so for, folks like, AOL is OpenID enabled. We've got had some great conversations with Microsoft, and we're actually going up there this week to chat with them more about ways that OpenID and CardSpace can work together. What's going to happen, I think, is we're going to see a lot more of the small sites coming online, and slowly but surely that's going to sort of force some of the bigger sites to come online.
Well, now Twit.tv is a Drupal site. What do I need to do to make OpenID work?
Actually, there are several great Drupal plugins.
So just get a module and plug into
it. You can just get a module and drop it in, and you're off and running. And actually, yeah, it supports it, it. That would be fantastic, actually.
Yeah. It would be great for me because I sit here authenticating people because we've had such spam problems. And I look at Michael Arrington, who says he's getting, 15,000 spam comments posted on his site a day.
Yeah.
It would get that way if I weren't careful about approving. And I'd like to stop. Now, does this kind of technology kind of help us with that too?
Well, it doesn't quite yet. I think this is where the whole reputation piece comes in. I was actually talking with Jimmy Wales, a couple months ago about, hey, geez, if I had a way that I could say this user with this OpenID has made, 400 edits on any number of wikis across the internet, I would then trust them to just post to my site automatically, right? Because they've sort of jumped through a certain amount of hoops that make them, a legitimate person. And so I think what we're going to start to see are these sort of variations on types of reputation, right? So sort of a wiki reputation that's tied to some sort of blog reputation that's tied to all these other things that you sort of build up who you are on the internet. And then those are going to be hooked into services and allow people to participate or not. So
it's almost like when you hear of people having Google juice, they're really high up on the search results in Google. It's kind of the same idea as you have all this power or credibility associated to your online identity.
Right. Or the real trick is to have a name like mine. You know, yeah, there aren't many.
If you're John Smith, you're in trouble. There's too many. Yeah. You can't Google John Smith and find the right John Smith. Scott Kvetin, no problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm lucky in that sense. Actually, there's another Kvetin out there, and he's moving up the ranks. I gotta knock him down a peg.
I don't know what the term is.
I feel bad for all the people named Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte, because I think we pretty much own that space.
Yes,
there's not
yes.
many, fortunately, Leo.
Now, there's a lot of Leo Laportes.
Are there really?
Yeah, it's a very common name, unfortunately. When I lived in Providence, there were 21 Leo Laportes in the phone book.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, it's a common French-Canadian name. I guess if you Google Leo Laporte now, I own it. But that's not fair to the other Leo Laportes, really.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm spewing so much Google juice that they can't even be seen. They're 20 pages down. So this would help them, too.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, I really appreciate your coming on to explain this. I understand a little bit better now, and I think it's the coming thing because it's open. You know, Microsoft did it. Nobody wanted to play because it's Microsoft. I don't want them to own my personal information.
Absolutely.
But
it's got to be up to the users. It's got to be in the control of the users. I actually think, you know, that identity, when people look back at 2007, they'll say, wow, that was the year that identity really started to take off. And hey, you know, you guys are finding out in March instead of December. So.
Yes, that's what we specialize in. We're the early adopters.
Cool.
The bleeding edge. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much
for having me, guys.
Thank you
so much.
If you want to get an OpenID, and it's easy to do, you can go to myopenid.com, and it takes about 3 seconds, and you'll have an OpenID with your name, which mine, for instance, is leolaporte.myopenid.com. And I hope they succeed in this, because I think the reputation piece is something that really needs to be done.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to sign up.
Good. And, of course, I still have claimid.com/Leo. And I guess what I'll do is put that little HTML code in leoville.com, and that'll become my kind of page. Now I just have get a good design on it. Should we take a few calls before we wrap this baby up?
Yeah, let's try to squeeze one or two
minutes. Squeeze in some calls. Let's start with Talk Tech. Hello, Talk Tech. Welcome. You're on Net at Night with Leo and Amber.
Hello, Leo. It's Joe from Rockford, Illinois.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
What can we do for you today?
Yes. I know you talked a little bit about the YouTube suit at the very beginning of the show, but do you think this is going to bring them down in the long run?
We spent a long time talking about this on Twit, and it's really an interesting story. Twit will go up tonight, and we had some good people on to talk about it. You know, Jim Lauterbach thinks it's the end for YouTube. Lance Ulanoff, who is an editor also at PC Magazine, thinks Viacom is just acting incredibly stupid. And I have to say, I think it's more Viacom's stupidity. They probably had to sue. What do you think, Amber? I mean, $1 billion.
I think it's ridiculous. Obviously this is way more money and way more severe than anything like NBC was doing last year. But you remember when NBC had threatened YouTube a long time ago, and then they kind of took a 180 and ended up putting their videos up there and starting a channel. I don't know. I think it just looks bad on Viacom. YouTube is massive.
To summarize, we had a great panel. We had Doc Searles, and we had Robert Scoble. Mm-hmm. And we had Will Harris and Alex Lindsay and Jason Calacanis dialed in for a little bit. And to summarize what they said ultimately was, hey, Google, $1 billion, big deal. Google can afford 10 of these lawsuits. It's not going to stop them. They're going to fight it. But even if they lose, YouTube is here to stay. And I hope that's the case.
As do I.
I love YouTube. Good question. Thank you. Dylan is on the line. Dylan K. Hoops. Hello, Dylan. Welcome to Net at Night.
Hey, Leo.
Are you the 14-year-old who has your own podcast?
Yeah, I do. I started my first talk show on Saturday. So.
Hey, congratulations. What's the name of it?
It's called 0.7 Lead Radio, and I know it's kind of a weird name, but I actually have a blog called 0.7 Lead. And
I know what 0.7 Lead means. It's the lead in your automatic pencil.
That's actually where I got the name.
Yeah.
It's kind of random.
I like 0.5 millimeter myself, but if you're a 0.7 guy, that's okay.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just like a tech blog where I post kind of interesting things that I found on the internet, or like Mac picks, Windows 6, other
Great.
Things like that. We're actually in the middle of going through a bit of a revamp, so we're going to have more content coming down the pipeline and stuff. So, yeah, I did my first show on
Congratulations,
Saturday.
Dylan.
Dang, you're 14 years old. See, Leo, I told you, these young kids.
It's so exciting.
It is so exciting. We got to listen to some of these shows.
I wish I were 14 now. Not because I want to, you know, you used to be, you'd wish you were 14 so you could have a party. I wish I were 14 because I just can't wait to see what happens over the next 60 years. And I know I'm not going to make it that long. And I think we're in an amazing transition that we can't even imagine what it's going to be like 50 years from now. You'll be around, but I'll be dust by then.
Oh, Leo, we started the show off depressing with you guys. You're dying.
My goal is to be to make it long enough so that I can be here when I can download my head into a machine.
Well, if you're not Leo, I can take over that responsibility.
And then I'll never die because I'll be in a machine. And hey, who knows? Maybe the machine will live on TalkShoe and I could just do podcasts for all eternity.
Leo, we could take all of the podcasts you've ever done, taking the audio from it, and then recreate an animated character who would live forever. And
you
we
probably could
make up whatever you wanted to say because we'd have all the words because you've done so
There's
many
There's enough
audio
of podcasts. My DNA out there. You probably could, huh?
Good. I mean, I'm not saying we don't need you anymore.
No, I think you don't. In fact, I'm retiring right now.
I killed Leo Laporte.
You killed me. Great. That's good. That's something to be remembered for. Just remember the motto of this show, Geek is the New Black.
I love that. I'm totally stealing it.
And it's obviously the name of the show now. Amber, it's such a pleasure. I missed you. I can't wait to do this again. Remember, folks, tune in early. We'll be doing this show at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Which I think, I'm not sure, but I think is either 11 p.m. or midnight GMT.
Perfect.
GMT doesn't observe daylight savings time, so I think it's 11 p.m. That's much better for the European listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. We love them all. We love all our listeners. In fact, why don't we unmute them all right now?
Let's unmute them so we have creepy, creepy talk before bedtime.
This is good. Just pretend you're in a Jason Friday the 13th movie. Everybody, I want you to say good night from Ned at Night. Good night, everybody. Good night, Amber. And we'll see you next time on Ned at Night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Not all.
See you next time.